The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
You don't have to adjust your screen. That really is a red shirt. Thanks, Kara, for that. Coming up today, is this a season that Cubs fans will not forget Harry Caray, but want to commit Harry Caray? Why trying to change a team's cavalier attitude may not work this late in the NBA season? And come Sunday, the sun will be shining on someone's old Kentucky home. We'll tell you if it's going to be Rick Pitino's house or John Calipari's house.
So, Dave, you just dissed Kara's dressing style, and she told me on the way in today, when she dressed me, as she does on a daily basis, she said that she's very excited to challenge you to a fashion contest.
Game on.
She claims that she knows what's hot, and you do not.
She knows what's hot, and she's been with you for over 10 years. So your qualifications already, Kara, aren't that terribly good. By the way, those cinnamon buns early in the week, we did like those.
First take on a Friday. What do we have for our audience today that you want to share as a first reaction for what we saw last night?
Actually, it's a reaction to what I didn't see last night. Out to dinner when the Lakers in Oklahoma City tip off. Look up the first score on the BlackBerry. Lakers up by a dozen. Do we have a little bit of a problem here? No, you get home, turn the game on, and there's no problem anywhere. Even though the Lakers want to have revamped a little bit with Ramon Sessions, look at the issues still there. First major step-up game with Sessions as a starting point guard, only 7 points, the same number of turnovers as assists. Boy, look at that bench cluster. The plus-minus from last night, very, very enlightening. Matt Barnes, minus 13. Steve Blake, minus 14. Josh McRoberts, minus 13. Troy Murphy, minus 9. And none of those four played big minutes. Yeah, Lakers prime for a playoff run? No, this is a team that still isn't even guaranteed a playoff spot yet. You know, they sit there at the number 3. They could still fall way out of there. So when they had a chance to step up, they didn't do it. We saw a lot there we'll be able to work with in the weeks ahead. Okay. Not even going to say anything more, but it is game on. What else did you bring outside of a very bright shirt?
Well, I promised a big show announcement today, and here it is. We will be wrapping up season one of Vegas Sports Day on Monday.
You're not going to wear red for that, will you?
No, I'll probably wear a cover shirt on Monday. I think that'd be appropriate. That'll give us a chance to close out the NCAA basketball season with a championship game analysis on Monday. We're going to be able to finish up our Major League Baseball previews. We're going to be able to talk about the NBA down the stretch, some bet on and bet against teams, some things to look for, and, of course, the opportunity to deliver one last Vegas Sports Day Play of the Day winner on Monday. We're going to use the summer months as expected, as planned, to make the show better. Better graphics, new sponsors, tweak the content, the works. Vegas Sports Day will be back on air in August. That's going to give us a chance to deliver both NFL and college football previews before the season begins. But we're counting down, Dave. We have this show. We have Monday's show. Then we're going to take our summer break. Okay, a lot of ground to cover today. So let's get to two of the more interesting division races we're going to be able to talk about in Major League Baseball. Right at the top here in Market Watch, the Brewers, Cardinals, and Reds at the top of the NL Central, vying for the NL Central title. And, of course, the Pirates, Cubs, and Astros ineptly fighting it out for last place in this division. Real quick, let's go through these numbers. The same format we've been using all week. We're going to what's posted here, last year's win total, this year's odds to win the division. So last year, the Brewers won 96 games. This year, plus 260 underdogs to win this division. Not even the second choice. They're the third choice to win the NL Central. St. Louis got hot late, won 90 games in the regular season. This year, a little bit more than 2-1 dogs to win the division at plus 220. Cincinnati, a sub-500 team a year ago, couldn't get anything to break right for the Reds last year. 79 wins. This year, they're the chalk, plus 155 to win the division. And then, of course, the three teams at the bottom. The Pirates, they were in first place as late as July last year. In fact, late July, well, they finished with 72 wins. This year, 27-1 to win the division. The Chicago Cubs, 71 wins a season ago. They're 21-1 to win the division. Of course, Chicago always has lower future prices than they should because every Cubs fan in the world wants to bet a ticket on Chicago every year. Hence, the lower price there for the Cubs. And, of course, the Houston Astros, the worst team in baseball last year, only 56 wins. Not expected to be much better this year. They're 85-1 long shots, not to win the World Series, not to win the National League, just to win the division. So markets are calling for a major shift here, Dave. Last year, the Reds finished 17 games behind the Brewers. This year, they're expected to supersede Milwaukee. Is that valid? What's wrong with the Brewers?
Yeah, let's break this into two clusters of three teams. Talk about the three teams at the top. Okay, the Brewers lost Prince Fielder. But you get an upgrade at third base with Aramis Ramirez. Looks like Ryan Braun's suspension is going to be okay now. So why are they looking to fall that far, or why is Cincinnati looking to make up that much ground? We're not entirely sure here. Here's what's fascinating. When you look at that Milwaukee starting rotation, all five starters won in double figures last year, but did any of them look like they had a max-out season? No, could actually some of the five even improve? Yeah, Randy Wolf, maybe we might see some signs of decline out of him. Those other starters, they could be fine this year. The bullpen's got a chance to be decent. The lineup is going to produce. I'm not sure why there's not that much Milwaukee love out this year. Is it just simply the small market team that doesn't get the respect that others do? I don't know where Cincinnati necessarily makes up 17 games in a gap. Yeah, will Milwaukee win 96? No. They could easily fall down into the upper 80s. But they still look like, from top to bottom, the best team in that division to us right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Brewers opened 14-20 last year. They went on a monster run, 82-46 surge over the summer months. They got five more wins in the postseason. Obviously a pretty good team. And this whole division had a strong bias to the over. In fact, five of the six teams finished with a profitable season. If you bet every game over the total, Milwaukee was the only one that didn't. And they were a push, essentially, where they go 77-77 totals-wise a year ago. But that 77-77 included Randy Wolf going 11-21 to the under, Sean Markham finishing 11-20 to the under in their respective starts. So the lesser guys in the rotation, they went over a lot when they were pitching. They were number two in baseball in money earned a season ago. 57-24 at Miller Park, a dominant home field edge. Money losers on the road, even though they were the second most profitable team to support in baseball. And, of course, a winning record against all three divisions in the National League, 78-48 versus righties, just .500 versus lefties. But, you know, infield defense was a problem for this team last year. Could be a problem again in 2012. They had zero losses in the second half of the season in games where they led after seven innings. The bullpen was phenomenal, but looks like a good bullpen once again. And there's no reason to think Milwaukee's not going to be good this year. I'm just not convinced they're going to match last year's magic.
So what happens with these other contenders? Well, different atmosphere in St. Louis. Usually coming off of a World Series win, there's a swagger, there's a lot of confidence. Little different story here. For the first time since 1995, you won't have Tony La Russa or Albert Pujols, you know, around. Yeah, the loss of Pujols, you make up a little bit of that with Carlos Beltran, which isn't too bad. But the loss of La Russa, maybe a different story. It's one of the things the Cardinals are going to have to do, juggle the bullpen again. Is there someone we could say, yes, this is the St. Louis closer? No, it doesn't look that way. We don't know about Chris Carpenter's back injury. He's going to miss opening day. Not sure when he's going to be ready. The one positive sign, though, Adam Wainwright looks to be back to full health. When he is, he's real, real good.
you know, you left out the one guy who might be the most important one. Yeah, they lost La Russa. Yeah, they lost Pujols. The reason that St. Louis has been as good as they've been over the course of the last decade, consistently winning more games than they should year in, year out, with probably less talent than a lot of teams in their division, pitching coach Dave Duncan. He's taking a leave of absence, not sure what his status is, but without him, I mean, when you look at all of the overachieving pitchers the Cardinals have had, Dave Duncan's the best pitching coach in baseball, bar none. His absence will be felt in St. Louis every bit as much as La Russa or even Pujols in that lineup. But, I mean, this team dramatically overachieved a season ago. Strong to the over, 86 and 71 to the over, and that in a very pitcher-friendly ballpark at Busch Stadium. They were a big money loser prior to their 23-9 finish to the season. They went 8-1 as underdogs during that stretch, 15-9 as chalk. And they were underdogs in 12 of their 18 playoff games, 6-6 in the 12 games where they were dogs. So they gave a lot of nice plus price returns at the end of the season. But you look at this lineup, I mean, you know, Berkman's old, Beltran's old, Holiday's old, Molina's old, old. You look at the pitching staff, there's no one on this staff, you know, that initially is going to say, wow, they're going to be a streak stopper. You look at the Kyle Loesches of the world, the Jake Westbrooks over the world. You know, Jaime Garcia was a monster over pitcher last year, tied with Roy Halladay with 20 overs. I'm not very bullish on St. Louis coming into 2012. I think they are something of an overvalued commodity.
So does that open a door for the Reds? It kind of does, because we're not sure Milwaukee or St. Louis get to 90 this year. But can the Reds increase 10 wins? Not quite sure where. They don't maximize what they have on the field. They do add Matt Latos now in the rotation. And here's what's interesting about Latos. So many of these San Diego pitchers were careful with when they get dealt because of the Petco Park factor. Matt Latos, almost a dead neutral. Someone who did not have significantly better numbers in Petco. So maybe he can be for real. But the rest of that rotation, Bronson Arroyo, way past peak, Homer Bailey is who he is. Will we see Aroldis Chapman in the rotation? Or now, with the absence of Ryan Madsen, will he be moved back to the bullpen? And is there anyone we can say is the everyday closer? Sean Marshall has the stats that indicate that he could be, but does that mean he's ready for the role? Yeah, we can see Cincinnati being a little better, maybe moving to a winning record, but not sure why they're favored over Milwaukee here. We just don't see that.
There's a coach in arena football by the name of Mike Hennessy. He's bounced around the league the last few years because he continually gets fired from the last job that he's had. And literally, his poor clock management costs his team a touchdown in every game. So you take your normal power rating, you subtract 7, and you say, all right, this is what it actually should be worth. Dusty Baker is a moral equivalent of that in Major League Baseball. Dusty Baker habitually, year in, year out, makes wrong decisions with his lineups, makes wrong decisions in-game, when to take starters out, when to leave them in, mismanages his bullpen. I am not a Dusty Baker fan. You look at this Reds team, they should be really good. On paper, they're every bit as good as Milwaukee. They're better than St. Louis. You know, you look at the infield, you know, if Scott Rolen is able to get through his fourth shoulder surgery, if Zach Cozart gets healthy, this is a dynamic infield. You know, maybe the best in baseball. I mean, we're talking about Brandon Phillips at second, Joey Votto at first. That's a nice quartet. You know, there's speed and power in the outfield. The starting staff is okay. The bullpen, decent, although obviously the loss of Ryan Madsen, their big acquisition, who was supposed to be locking down the back end of that bullpen, well, he's out for the year. So a big loss there. But since he should be as good as all these other teams, but they were big money losers last year with a very similar roster, ranked number 24 out of 30 Major League Baseball teams, 14 games to the over, you know, over 500 to the over if you bet them every game. They should be good, but the Baker factor, whew, I mean, year in, year out, and he continues to find work.
Now there's a big gap as we move to the bottom three, and maybe the less said the better, because what's interesting about them, two of the three, the Cubs and the Astros, literally enter these seasons with no expectations of playing well at all, because the seasons don't matter. Theo Epstein takes over in Chicago. This is going to be a tear it down, build it back up for the Cubs. No chance of getting into contention. But does any team in memory go into a season with less to play for than Houston? New owner, new general manager. You're going to shift divisions next year, move out to the AL West. No chance of selling tickets for this bunch, no chance of contending. So it's a year to evaluate. What are the Astros hoping for the most? Carlos Lee gets off to a good start, so you can trade him. Wandy Rodriguez gets off to a good start, so you can trade him. Brett Myers, now the closer in the bullpen, gets off to a good start, so you can trade him and begin to build for the future. Astros are going to be a very, very difficult team to handicap because they're going to fall below traditional parameters. Yet there's almost a temptation to say, you know what, let's start investing against Houston right off the bat because the markets might not accept that they're below those traditional parameters. And yeah, we're laying 85s, 90s, and 200s, but maybe we do it until the markets show that they recognize just how bad this team is going to be.
Yeah. As I've talked about earlier in the week, you can make money sometimes in the NFL when you're catching 18, you know, plus 18 with the team that probably should be plus 14. They can lose the game and still cover the point spread. Sometimes, late in the season, there's money to be made with those type of teams. In the NBA, you know, you can make money with a team like New Orleans or even Charlotte once the point spread gets to ridiculous levels that give you enough value that even though they lose the game by double figures, they still cover the number. That can't and doesn't happen in baseball. The worst teams year in, year out, in terms of straight-up records, are the worst teams in terms of money. I don't think there's any way to make money with the Houston Astros. I don't think there's any way to make money with the Chicago Cubs. Easy teams to fade. And, yeah, you may have to lay a high price to do it. As Dave said, if you have to lay $1.80 every game to bet against them, hey, there may well be money to be made even at that price. And you don't have to do it forever. You don't have to do it every game. But, boy, there's going to be some good spots to lay some wood going against these very bad teams from the NL Central. For Pittsburgh, I mean, Pittsburgh merits a little bit of talk here because the Pirates, remember, they were in first place after the All-Star break last year into late July. And then we remember the Jerry Meals call at home plate in the 19th inning where a runner that was out by six steps was, I'm tired of calling balls and strikes. I want to go home. You're safe. Ball game over. And, of course, after that, the Pirates lost 11 in a row and went into free fall. Ended up finishing 72-90, but finished as the number 15 team among 30 Major League Baseball squads to support. They weren't bottom of the barrel like Chicago or Houston. But I found one of the best quotes I've seen all year in quite some time. Neil Walker, the Pirates' second baseman, talking about their hot start last year. Again, this is a 72-90 team, a team that is a professional sports record. In all of professional sports, no team has lost more than 19 consecutive seasons like the Pirates. Here's Walker's quote. For sure, I don't think we'll be sneaking up on anybody anymore.
Difference, though, between the Pirates and the Cubs and Astros, they will at least try, but here's the frustrating part if you're a Pittsburgh fan. Eric Bedard, healthy enough to be your opening day starter. So plenty of optimism comes out of that. Yet what's the biggest plan that the Pirates have for Bedard? Get him off to a good start. So you know where I'm going with this. We can trade him. That's the problem with the teams at the bottom of this division. The best starters. If Matt Garza gets off to a good start with the Cubs, he won't be a Cub all year. Bedard won't be a Pirate all year. Wandy Rodriguez, he will not be an Astro all year. These are going to be teams that are going to start poorly and get even worse.
So it's time about emails. We're getting great emails all week, and again, even though we're not going to be on air over the summer, we're just going to be around. But for this weekend, if you have an email question you want us to answer, be sure to send it in Monday. We will get caught up on the emails. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. The forums in at Covers, covers.com/posting forum. Dave and I will be popping in over the summer months, answer the questions that you post there, so be sure to get involved in the community. And of course, you can always follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. We will be sure to announce when, in August, we'll be back on the air.
So you're tired of listening to us talk about the Astros, the Pirates, and the Cubs? We have the NBA versions up next. The Wizards and the Cavaliers are coming up in Money Time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, it's money time. Anything to get Malinsky happy on a day like today.
Doesn't make up for the red.
No, but when I don't shriek, you seem to enjoy the show a little bit
more. Yeah, I almost need sunglasses in here.
This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Washington, D.C., where the Philadelphia 76ers -8.5 against the Wizards. And one of the keys to the final few weeks of the NBA play is how the bad teams are going to close out their seasons. Does a condensed schedule make it even tougher to maintain energy when you're playing without any sort of a motivational target? And the Wizards, boy, they're in one of the season's worst settings tonight. 7 games in 9 days, 5 straight court changes at the end, and boy, they've suffered a couple of tough defeats. 4 of their last 5 losses have come by 4 points or less. They've been playing hard without JaVale McGee and Nick Young and Andre Blotch. They're much improved on defense, but they have to work so hard to score right now, less than 84 points per game in this current 0-5 slide. If you have to work that hard to score, what happens when you're lacking in energy against a team like Philly?
And it becomes a real issue tonight because Philly will not be lacking in energy. 76ers have had back-to-back days off. That means that you've got your legs underneath you. You also get a game plan in place. And yes, the game matters because you're tied with the Celtics now for first place in the Atlantic. So that means you're supposed to bring the right pieces to take advantage of those Washington weaknesses. And it's exactly what the 76ers have done all year. This next graphic is one Jacob loves the most because all he's got to do is go in and just tweak the numbers a little bit. How have the Sixers done as big favorites? We've talked about it before. We'll continue to talk about it. Laying -7 or more this year, just remarkable. 20-1 straight up, 18-3 against the spread. Now, we told you a big part of that from a value standpoint is the markets don't adjust properly because while as good as they are in this role, they give it back as small favorites. So the overall rating doesn't change. So look at the fact that since the All-Star break, even when you think they would even out for this trend, 5-0 straight up and against the spread, beating the spread by 50.5 points in the process. I mean, not only are they covering these lines, but since the break, they're covering them by an average of more than 10 points a game over the spread. Odds makers are not adjusting properly for this, so can we go to the well one more time?
Well, I mean, we focused on the Philly floor game as a prime factor in building margins versus bad teams, but we got to give special credit to this defense because the Sixers are doing something that nobody else in the NBA is doing. Points per possession, Philly 94.5 points per 100 possessions. No one else in the league lower than 96.3. And that gap shows how hard they go for the full 48 minutes. And it could mean major Washington endgame struggles to put any sort of offense on the board in the fourth quarter.
Let's go to Cleveland. Milwaukee, the road team, a 5-point favorite over the host Cavaliers. We've talked about Milwaukee a few times in the show after the Monte Ellis trade. The way that their attitude has picked up, the chemistry has been good. They lead the NBA in assists since March 1st. Only game they played this week back on Tuesday against Atlanta, a double-digit win despite Ersan Ilyasova not playing. 5 different players score at least a dozen points. So they're not only talking the talk in terms of wanting to get into the playoffs, they're walking the walk as well. 8-3 straight up and against the spread last 11 games. A road favorite 4 times in that span. They win and cover all 4 of those. Now you get a couple of off days to practice. Helps to integrate Monte Ellis a little bit more in the rotation. Ilyasova, he'll be back in the lineup tonight off of those off days. So we look for that Milwaukee chemistry to only get better. What's forcing them to play hard? The Knicks are playing so well under Mike Woodson. Right now, Milwaukee is not a favorite to catch them for that final playoff spot, but they're chasing hard. That energy is very positive right now.
Cleveland, not so much positive energy these days. You know, another example of a bad lottery-bound team that's running low on fuel. You know, on Tuesday, we talked about how Byron Scott led them through the toughest practice of the season the previous day and how it could actually backfire. And guess what? It backfired. They lost by 18 at Philly, followed up the next night with a 12-point home loss to the Detroit Pistons, which was the biggest margin of victory, or tied the biggest margin of victory that the Pistons had on the highway all season long. And it may not just be about attitude right here. They simply don't have the horses at this stage of the season. To lose Ramon Sessions and Daniel Gibson around the same time leaves them woefully short of offensive options. You know, they got Kyrie Irving, they got Antoine Jameson, and they have nothing else in terms of consistently being able to put the biscuit in the basket. The scoreboard tells the tale. Let's see that graphic. Cleveland's offense, without Sessions, without Gibson. There's been five games, 0-5 straight up, 1-4 against the spread, less than 83 points per game. And we're talking about 39% shooting during that span. So here's a Milwaukee team that's going to bring energy and focus, a Bucks team that's very difficult to defend these days. Last six games for the Bucks, they've had six different leading scorers. You shut somebody down, somebody else can step up. Cleveland has no such balance. They lack that interior defense, and they cannot really score to play well from behind. So, Dave, where does that lead us when it comes to perhaps a play of the day possibility?
Let's take this one all the way home. Let's take Milwaukee and lay the five. We like the offensive energy. A team that shares the ball well gets easy baskets around the basket because Cleveland has no defensive presence inside. And the fact that the Cavaliers are struggling so badly to score means we don't mind laying points because the back door gets closed. The Cavaliers, not the type of team they're going to nick you from behind in a setting like this. Milwaukee minus the five, that works.
Up next, I suppose you guys might be interested in a little bit of Final Four discussion. You interested in some
Even if they got to sit through that shirt, they're going to want the discussion.
Well, the audio pod, you know, they don't have to sit through the shirt. Bottom line, time to head to the Superdome to break down the Final Four as Vegas Sports Day continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Money Time Part 2. We're going to start talking about the NCAA Final Four games in New Orleans on Saturday. And let's pop that graphic, show the current lines. Right now we have Kentucky minus 8.5 against Louisville. And this is one game where whichever side you like, you can get the best of the number. There are 8.5s out there right now. There are minus 9s out there right now. If you like Kentucky, be sure to lay the 8.5. If you like Louisville, be sure to catch the plus 9. Both lines widely available. Total there, 137. In the nightcap, Ohio State, 2.5-point chalk against Kansas. Total in that contest, 136.5.
For those of you only listening on the audio, say hideous, hideous red shirt. That probably even sounds bad, you know, if you could say such a thing. Kentucky Louisville, as almost as much passion for a Final Four game as we're going to see. If you know what it's like in that state, boy, it's going to be awfully, awfully dynamic. And the game on the court has a chance to be, because this is not going to look like a typical 8.5-point favorite. Ordinarily, when the line's that high, now here's a talent gap. That means the underdog wants to slow the game down, negate the talent gap, and try to gut it out. That's not the way you beat Kentucky, though. If you're going to beat them, you almost need to speed it up. Because for Louisville to win, they have to win with defense. They have to guard. They have to get after Kentucky, try to create some turnovers, get out on the break. This is not going to be an 8.5-point dog saying, well, let's hang around. This is going to be a team that's going to guard Kentucky the length of the floor. Even though Kentucky's got better players, this is the best way for Louisville to win. And oh, by the way, it's also what Louisville does best.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky can't play any better than they played last weekend. I really don't think they can. I mean, nothing short of fantastic, knocking off Indiana and Baylor by 12 points apiece. Against Indiana, offensive game plan was nearly flawless. They shot 48% from the floor. They hit 35 of 37 from the free throw line. Only committed 6 turnovers for the entire game. And yet, game on the line, end of the second half, point spread outcome in doubt in that contest. Kentucky played as well as they could play. Didn't know if they were going to cover. In fact, Indiana had, it was an 8-point game, and the Hoosiers had the ball until the Wildcats hit more, every other free throw on a night, again, where 35 of 37 from the charity stripe. Against Baylor, more of the same. I mean, that first half against Baylor was as dominant a stretch of basketball that you're going to see any team play all year. I mean, they annihilated Baylor in that first half. And yet, end of the second half, game on the line, there's Baylor down 8 with the ball, 30 seconds to play. You know, Baylor couldn't hit a shot. They shot under 40% from the floor in that ballgame. Kentucky, 53% from the floor. Again, only 12 turnovers. They got to the free throw line 44 times. They played as well as they could play and still sweating out the point spread cover. Now, you look back to the first meeting between these two teams, and one of the things that we saw, again, Rupp Arena, New Year's Eve, a different set of circumstances than we're going to find here in New Orleans. But what we see, we saw Kentucky held under 30% shooting for the game by this Louisville defense. This is a Kentucky offense that has scored a ridiculous 220 points in their last 163 possessions. That's a 1.35 points per possession ratio, by far the highest in the NCAA. If you looked at that for a full season, obviously Missouri was the best in the country at 1.21. This is a 1.35 over the last couple of games. And it's certainly worth noting that when we talk about perception, we haven't seen a Final Four favorite this high, at -9 or higher, since 1999, when Duke failed to cover as 11-point chalk in their 6-point win over Michigan State. And I don't know if we should really forget either that Kentucky, the only team remaining with a freshman point guard, a good freshman point guard, but a freshman point guard nonetheless, in Marcus Teague, who had more turnovers than assists in the Elite Eight victory over Baylor.
Of course, the reason why Kentucky has been so good offensively is they're real good. 4 different players have scored at least 20 points in a tournament game. You rarely say that about any teams. That shows you their balance. But Louisville can defend. Louisville can scrap. Here's the problem. Can Louisville make shots if they don't get turnovers? Okay, Louisville has made it to the Final Four. You think, okay, they've solved their problems. No, in this tournament, they're shooting 42.3%. Not easy to win 4 games by doing that. So they've corrected things on the boards, right? No, they've actually been out-rebounded by -14 in this tournament. They don't shoot well. It's not like you're going to wait for those shots to come around. They haven't shot well in better venues than the Superdome, which is very difficult to shoot in. So that's the problem. Can Louisville get enough out of their defensive pressure? Because if they do, as the game goes on, mental toughness comes into play. You know what you're going to get from Louisville. You're going to get 40 minutes, no matter what. No matter how bad they're out of a game, they will scrap and compete. Kentucky, part of why, of course, they have not covered these spreads widely in these early tournament games, lose focus with big leads. Look at the end of the Western Kentucky game, a game they could have won in the 30s. The Baylor game, of course, part of that Baylor was the fouling by Drew. Kentucky led by 15 with a minute 40 to play, where that game would have fallen likely if not for the fouling. But they haven't been in a lot of tense situations. If Louisville's in the hunt late, look for Kentucky's kids to get a little bit tight, a little bit nervous. If it's close, Pitino just might steal it.
And it's worth mentioning once again, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, but we have to talk about the closing seconds in the first meeting between these two teams. Don't be fooled for a minute by the final score of that ballgame. Was a 7-point margin. Well, this is what happened. Kentucky led by 13, 9.5-point chalk, 9.5, even as high as 10 in some spots. But they led by 13 with 5 seconds left. Russ Smith hit a 3 for Louisville, stole the ball, hit another 3 at the buzzer, and they lose by 7. Tough, tough beat if you were a Wildcats backer, but That's what happens sometimes when you're laying a few too many points, a few more points than you probably should.
Now we move to the nightcap. The question is, do you want to lay any points at all between what look like two pretty even teams going in? Two teams that match up with each other in a way that it's hard to see this one getting away very much in one direction or the other. Talk about defense at the end of games. Now, Louisville has been brilliant. But Kansas, late game situation in this tournament, just about as good as we've seen. You throw out the first round game because you're in against a soft opponent. But look at these last three Kansas wins where the defense had to step up late because all of these games are dead even at that final media timeout. And that's the timeout under the 4 minute mark. Look at the defense after that last timeout. North Carolina, 1 point. NC State, 5 points. Purdue, 4 points. Those last three games, after that final timeout, they only gave up a combined total of 10 points. And if you were watching, this wasn't Purdue or Ohio State or NC State missing wide open shots. These are teams struggling to get shots. Kansas, when they've had to D up, they've done it awfully well. Problem with that, the reason why they had to D up, Tyshawn Taylor hasn't made a three-pointer the entire tournament, sitting on an 0 for 17. The offense wasn't good enough to have put those opponents away earlier. That may be a problem again tomorrow.
Sure. I mean, for me, this is something of a tough game side-wise, most assuredly. Prior to the start of the tournament, I write this column every year at the end of February / first week of March, before the conference tournaments really get into swing. And I call it, who has what it takes to win the big dance. And the two teams that I singled out to play for the title, Kansas and Ohio State. I said these were the two teams that offered the most value, and they're here right now. Unfortunately, the way the bracket's set up, they're meeting in the Final Four as opposed to the title game. Otherwise, I'd look really smart, which, none of us think that I actually am. But the bottom...
Especially in that shirt.
Yeah. But the bottom line for this one is that when you look at how these two teams have gotten here throughout the course of the season, Ohio State, they're from the better conference. The Big Ten was as good as the Big East this year, really, when, again, top to bottom, when you look at the Big Ten, you can't compare it to the Big 12. The Big Ten was tougher. So Ohio State, a little bit more battle-tested. You look at the first meeting between these two teams. And again, extenuating circumstances. The game was played at Fog Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence. It was played, obviously, without Jarrett Sullinger. And remember, Sullinger wasn't announced as out until maybe an hour or two before the game. There was a 5-point line move when Sullinger was announced as out. All the money poured. Ohio State opened the favorite in that ballgame. It was their first true road game of the season. And even with Sullinger being announced as out and the hostile venue and the first road game situation, the Buckeyes were in that game. It was a late game run out for Kansas that gave them the margin. I believe it was a 4 or 6 point game with about 5 minutes left. And then Ohio State went cold and Kansas turned up that defensive pressure. So the defensive matchups are there for the Jayhawks, no question, Dave. And I'm sure there's some stuff that when it comes to these defensive matchups that you want to break down.
Yeah, part of it, and which is so fascinating, is the best offensive players run head-to-head into nightmares. Talk about Tyshawn Taylor, 0 for 17 from three-point range. He's going up against Aaron Kraft, the best on-ball defender on the perimeter in the nation this year, and maybe one of the best in several seasons. Tough for Kansas to get into their rhythm. But one of the most enlightening things about this college season is we've come to realize that Jarrett Sullinger is a good player, not necessarily a great one, because he doesn't score well against guys his own size or taller. Who's he going up against? Jeff Withey inside. Withey, if there's going to be an all-defensive team in this tournament, Aaron Kraft, Jeff Withey, maybe 1 and 2 for the defensive impacts that they've had. So each team has key offensive cogs you're going to have a tough time getting off. When you add the Superdome in, which is going to mean tougher shooting from the perimeter, and neither team has shot well from three-point range in this tournament. In fact, William Buford for Ohio State hasn't shot well inside the arc or outside. Two very, very good teams might end up playing a pretty darn ugly game.
Yeah, I think Jeng for Louisville might be on that all-defensive team as a first-teamer ahead of Withey. Two really strong defensive centers. But the bottom line is, you're absolutely right. They've no easy shots for either squad. You're not going to see a lot of penetration in this ballgame. You're not going to see a lot of runouts. Both teams, when they have the opportunity, look to push the pace and get those easy fast break buckets. with the transition defense that both the Buckeyes and the Jayhawks play. I don't know that we're going to see a lot of that at all. So you look at the defensive matchups for these two squads. From a side perspective, I mean, my gut says that Kansas may have maxed out. That Kansas, to get here, they didn't play their best basketball. They ran into things that worked in their favor. You know, they beat a 15 seed, a 10 seed, an 11 seed, and a team without their point guard to get to the Final Four. You know, I called for the Jayhawks to win it all. I'm not so sure that that was the appropriate call. Slight lean towards Ohio State, but I'm not going to lay 2.5. Bottom line for me, if I see a 1.5, you know, it's kind of like what we talked about yesterday with Stanford and Minnesota. You see the right number, you get to the window. If I see a 1.5, I'll lay it with Ohio State. If I see a 3.5, I'll take it with Kansas. At the current number of 2.5, I've got no action.
And that's the problem on that game, is that number is unlikely to move. The odds makers know they're balanced out pretty well. Even if they get overloaded one way or the other, they don't really have to move. They can rely on the markets to balance it back out. Becomes an awfully difficult game to bet unless there is line movement. But I agree with Teddy, 1.5, 3.5, either of those numbers is just enough to get you above that 53% plateau. At 2.5, just some awfully good entertainment.
Yeah. That's going to wrap it up for our Friday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. Be sure to tune in for the season 1 finale on Monday. Be here or be square.